88. Von Kleiner went up the companionway steps three at a time. He came out into the alleyway that led to the magazine and stopped abruptly. The alleyway was almost blocked by a mountain of cordite chargers thrown haphazard from the magazine by a knot of frantically busy stokers.
"What are you doing?" he shouted. "Lieutenant Keiler is looking for the bomb."
"Has he found it?" Von Kleiner demanded as he brushed past them.
"Not yet, sir."
Von Kleiner paused again in the entrance to the magazine. It was such a shambles. Led by Killer, men were tearing at the stacks of cordite, sweeping them from the shelves, ransacking the magazine. Von Kleiner jumped forward to help.
"Why didn't you send for me?"
he asked as he reached up to the racks above his head.
"No time, sir," grunted Killer beside him.
"How did you know about the bomb?"
"It's a guess. I could be wrong, sir."
"You're right. The woman told us it's set for 7 o'clock.
"Help us, God.
Help us," pleaded Killer, and hurled himself at the next shelf.
"It could be anywhere. Anywhere."
Capitan von Kleiner worked like a stevedore, knee-deep in spilled cylinders of cordite.
"We should clear the ship. Get some men off."
Killer attacked the next rack.
"No time. We've got to find it."
Then in the uproar there was a small sound, a muffled, tiny buzz, the alarm bell of a travelling clock.
"There!" shouted Killer. "That's it!"
And he dived across the magazine at the same moment as von Kleiner did. They collided and fell, but Killer was up instantly, dragging himself onto his feet, with hands clawing at the orderly rack of cordite cylinders. The buzz of the alarm clock seemed to roar in his ears. He reached out, and his hands fell on the smooth, paper-wrapped parcels of death. And at that instant, the two copper terminals within the leather case of the clock, which had been creeping infinitesimally slowly towards each other for the past 12 hours, made contact. Electricity stored in the dry cell battery flowed through the circuit, reached the hair, thin filament in the detonator cap, and heated it white hot. The detonator fired, transferring its energy into the sticks of gelignite that were packed into the cigar box. The wave of explosion leapt from molecule to molecule with the speed of light, so that the entire contents of Blucher's magazine were consumed in 1/100th part of a second. With it were consumed Lieutenant Killer and Capitan von Kleiner and the men about them. In the centre of that fiery holocaust they burned to vapour. The blast swept through Blucher, downwards through two decks, with a force that blew the belly out of her as easy as popping a paper bag, down through 10 fathoms of water to strike the bottom of the river, and the shock wave bounced up to raise 15-foot waves along the surface. It blew sideways through Blucher's watertight bulkheads, crumpling and tearing them like silver paper. It caught Rosa Oldsmith as she lay across Sebastian's chest hugging him. She did not even hear it come. It caught Hermann Fleischer just as he reached the deck and shredded him to nothingness. It swept through the engine room and burst the great boilers, releasing millions of cubic feet of scalding steam to race through the ship. It blew upwards through the deck, lifting the forward gun turret off its seating, tossing the hundreds of tons of steel high in a cloud of steam and smoke and debris. It killed every single human being aboard. It did more than merely kill them, it reduced them to gas and minute particles of flesh or bone. Then, still unsatisfied, its fury unabated, it blew outwards from Blucher's shattered hulk, a mighty wind that tore the branches from the mangrove forest and stripped it of leaves. It lifted a column of smoke and flame, writhing and twisting into the bright morning sky above the Rufiji Delta, and the waves swept out across the river, as though from the eye of a hurricane. They overwhelmed the two launches that were approaching Blucher, pouring over them and capsizing them, swirling them over and over, and spilling their human cargo into the frightening, frothing water. And the shock waves rolled on across the delta to burst thunderously against the far hills, or to dissipate out on the vastness of the Indian Ocean. They passed over the British cruiser Renounce as she entered the channel between the mangroves. They rolled overhead like giant cannonballs across the roof of the sky. Captain Arthur Joyce leapt to the rail of his bridge as he saw the column of agonized smoke rise from the swamps ahead of him. A grotesque living thing, unbelievable in its size, black and silver, and shot through with flame.
"They've done it!" shouted Arthur Joyce. "By Jove, they've done it!"
He was shaking, his whole body juddering, his face white as ice, and his eyes, which he could not drag from that spinning column of destruction that rose into the sky, filled slowly with tears. He let them overflow his eyelids and run unashamedly down his cheeks.